It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
Does the National League sweep the American League in the All-Star game? How you doing, Will?
Well, I didn't like that, because I'm an American League guy.
I know, Yankees.
But, you know, earlier this week, anyone who follows me on Twitter saw that I was one Twitter follower away, one tweeter away.
Greatness.
From 100 followers. I was very excited about this. It had taken me 6 months, but it was, you know. And I tweeted out, next person.
A desperate plea for attention.
A desperate plea for attention. You get a shout-out on the podcast. So I want to give a shout-out to my 100th Twitter follower, Jane, some woman named Jane. She's a perfectly wonderful, nice woman. And she's at Annie_Hall.
Look at that. How appropriate is that?
But here's what pisses me off. Today, somebody unfollowed me. So now I'm back down to 99.
So you're running another contest, so next week.
Next week. Next person who tweets me.
Well, you know, it's me. I unfollow you. Every time God giveth, he also taketh away.
So we're going to go through this every week. And every week when you say how you're doing, well, it's going to be about my Twitter
followers. That's it. It was just going to be an endless loop of you talking about
so
your Twitter
followers. So you're my personal nightmare, and you can go fuck yourself. Hey, tell us, give us some housekeeping. What's going on in the world of Will Sean Podcast?
Few things. Speaking of Twitter, we only have about 30 Twitter followers. We have about 159 Facebook friends.
160.
160. Well, you know, it's Annie_Hall.
Yeah.
La-di-da. So, only 30 Twitter followers. What's going on? Come on, people. Follow us on Twitter. I know it's one more thing you got to pay attention to, but it makes it difficult for us because then we need to put stuff on Twitter, put stuff on Facebook. If you're all following us everywhere, it just simplifies the process. Second thing, last night Will and I saw the proofs of our business cards, or a very close to final version.
Yes.
And we're very excited. They're looking good. They're classy yet understated.
Just like you and I.
That's it. It's subtle but powerful.
Not like you and I at all. So you're bombastic and weak all at the same time.
How does that work? Well, if you listen to the podcast, you know.
You know.
But once again, the cards coming out soon, and I think Will will be taking a batch with him to New York. So, Big Apple, Long Island, prepare. You're about to get glitter bombed? Will Sean podcast bombed?
Hey, Sean, who is our sponsor this week?
This week's episode is brought to us by Crayola. New from Crayola, it's the 50 Shades of Grey box of crayons. All your favorites are here. Grey, Slate Grey, Battleship, Glaucus, Duststorm, Cinerus, Davies Grey, Charcoal, and Taupe. Now your kids can make their own Griselle paintings while Mommy and Daddy play in the bedroom. 50 Shades of Grey crayon box set from Crayola.
I used to only color in shades of grey as
a child.
Well,
you were a very depressed child.
I'm in a depressed adult. We got a great show for you today. We're going to be discussing Katie Holmes' Escape from Scientology. We're going to be discussing some Emmy hopefuls. And also, the return of the best show on television, Breaking Bad. But first, we have a terrific guest with us today, an actress. She's been on tons of television shows like Cold Case, recently Necessary Roughness. And she's been in films like Get Smart. But also is the star of a cult film, Blubberella. So you may have seen that. You may not have seen that. It's Lindsay Hollister.
Hi.
Welcome aboard.
What's going on, guys?
Thank you for coming.
Well, you know, thank you for having me.
We have Lindsay and Gizmo.
I'm being very Hollywood right now, and I brought my dog to the podcast.
Very cute. He's looking at me.
This is the first non-human who's ever been involved in our show.
He's been doing a little tennis match back and forth between you guys as you did the opening.
Did he?
Yeah.
We have that effect on animals.
I think so.
Me and Gizmo are going to have a stare down.
I think you'll lose.
I'm sure I'll lose. So
welcome on this dark and stormy night.
Right? Weird little July weather here in Los Angeles.
And you have, I mentioned you're an actress, obviously. You've done a ton of television. I mean, looking at your IMDb page, like every show.
Almost. No, there's a lot. No, I've been really lucky. I've started my career in television, guest starring, and I've been very lucky to do a lot of great show, good episodes, good guest starring, you know, meaty kind of stuff. I used to say I either died or could kill somebody in every episode, but I'm kind of progressing past that a little bit. So
have you died in a lot of things?
Yeah, I died on Nip Tuck. I died on Boston Public, the first show I ever did. I died in Cold Case.
Cold Case, you were like burned alive
I was
in a house.
In a fraternity fire. Yeah,
the worst kind of fires.
They really are.
Oh, it's an alcohol fire.
Yeah, they're just fueled by testosterone, just burns brightly.
What it's like being a 16-year-old boy.
Yeah, exactly. So I killed on Law & Order Special Victims Unit. The list goes on.
Now, you get killed or you're alive and then you're a corpse? At a later point in the episode.
In Law & Order? Special
or just in general?
No, I was sort of like the person you think did the killing,
right.
And then I didn't, but then at the very end, I kill someone.
Ah.
And then it's like, dun-dun. Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. It's a dramatic ending.
So there's always that twist. Whoever the first person introduced is never the killer, but then sometimes
they bring
swap
them back
it somehow. Out right at the end.
Well, they got to keep the formula fresh. It's only been 37 seasons of 3 iterations of Law & Order. Let's take a step back for a minute here.
Sure.
Let's talk about your origins. So are you from Los Angeles originally?
No, I'm actually from just outside of Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
I'm an Ohio girl.
Go Buckeyes.
Yes, in some people's world. No, actually, I went to Miami University of Ohio.
Okay.
So,
wait, Miami University of Ohio?
Yes, sir.
It's true. I know someone else that went there, too.
It's what?
I know someone else that went there. Total fucking misnomer.
Ben Roethlisberger?
No.
Oh.
I don't know him.
Oh, just like a random
person? Oh, yeah, another person.
Quarterback
yeah.
of the Steelers?
Oh, I know who he is.
Oh, okay.
In some people's world.
So you don't know who Ben Roethlisberger is?
Yeah, yeah, Ben, a minute. We go bar hopping. Sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
We go pick up chicks at bars.
Exactly.
That's the guy to go bar hopping with. Yeah. Then you take a motorcycle.
That's how you end up in an episode of Law & Order Special Victims Unit, let me tell you.
Well done. So I was like, where were we?
In Miami.
So actually I went to Miami of Ohio. So, Buckeye State. But I went to school. I studied theater. Even though I knew I wanted to come out to Los Angeles, I knew I wasn't going to pursue theater. Mm-hmm. I can't sing, and I can't necessarily dance that well. So I knew I was going to come here, but I wanted to have a college education. And so right after college, I moved out here. And, full of naivete.
Mm-hmm.
As we all are when we come
you have
here.
To be.
I was born here. I was just...
Are you?
Yeah, weird. Grew up a mile from here.
Can I get your autograph?
Yeah, sure.
I have, like, a collection of...
Of locals?
The rare...
Creepy Valley boys. It's me, Bryan Cranston, and Robert Redford.
Exactly.
It's funny. You come out here, like, you don't realize how green you are. I guess anyone who's green doesn't. And then the second you get anything going, like, you're like, well, this will be great. And then it... Kind of, but
7 years later.
But what happened for you? Maybe I'm speaking too much about my own experience. But
it's true. Well, you know, when I came out in the late 90s, 99, it was a different world than
pre-9/11.
It is now. Yes, absolutely pre-9/11. To be perfectly honest, 9/11 had a lot to do with an impact on the industry. And my year before 9/11 was completely different than my year after 9/11, acting-wise. I mean, of course, for people, it was, you know, impactful.
What impact did it have on this industry in particular?
Well, if you really think, because we're so used to now celebrities being on television, names.
Yes.
And we're used to a lot of names being on television. Right. But if you really think back in, like, 99, 2000, there was not, like, you did not see that like you do now. And I did, the year I started, I started acting in 2000, and I was on Boston Public, was the first show I was cast on. I did 4 episodes, guest star on that show. It was a big show back then.
Yeah.
Everyone was
yeah.
watching David E. Kelly. And then I went on and did, like, 6 other guest stars. I was on a soap opera for a while. I mean, work was nice. And then 9/11 happened, and everything came to a screeching halt, and actors didn't want to travel anymore. People were staying in, like, Los Angeles. And then you had Kiefer Sutherland came down and did. I came down. I don't mean to say down to television like it should be down, but it's like a, you know,
but
he's
been
a star.
He was a name.
Exactly.
Yeah. Television used to kind of develop their own stars, and now they were taking stars from
Absolutely.
The world of movies.
Think about Friends. Nobody knew that cast.
Yeah.
Think about Seinfeld. I mean, you know, it was you were able to get on a show if you weren't a name, and then Kiefer came and did 24, and then it just started this rash of people wanting to stay close to home. They didn't want to travel further from their families. And of course, financially, everyone tightened their budgets because we didn't know where the world, what was going to happen. And guest star roles dried up. They stopped writing them. And it really, I mean, I did like one show after post 9/11 and, we all were just, you know, struggling, and you know, and then I feel like once the industry started to rejuvenate a bit, then we had the writer's strike. You know, we got like a few years
every
of like
time,
coming
yeah.
back, but still, once that threshold was crossed with you know, these movie stars, names coming to do television, there was no, I mean, it really pushed everybody down.
And now it's gotten to the point where, you know, get these actors and they build shows around them, and
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable. Some
and
of the talent.
And also, after around that same time, you had a big push with a lot of the cable, the pay cable shows were getting bigger and
bigger. Well, when did The Sopranos hit the air?
99 was the first year of The Sopranos, and
so that
kind
of
also
the beginning of this long form.
But those, like Gandolfini wasn't a name, but now when you do an HBO show, it's like, we're going to bring in Laura Dern, and she was in
Look at
Jurassic
Dinklage.
Park. Dinklage, the biggest star of them all.
Ironically, not.
So then you, but you worked steadily then. I mean, so then it picked up for you again, and you.
It did. I mean, I never really felt like, I really do feel, I've said it many times, that my career would be completely different in the 90s than it would be in the 2000s. There's just the, I mean, if the draft, I mean, even though we're 2012 now, but 2008, the writer's strike hit. And just in the 2000s, like, I feel like our world started to change. We went into a depression, or whatever you want to call it. Or we went
the
into a recession.
The great recession.
The great recession.
They're splitting the difference.
And I try to explain to people, when I talk about it with people back home in Ohio, my dad or whatever, I say, you know, when there's no money, people don't invest in film. When there's no film, all the actors who are doing film are going to come down and do television.
Well, they understand.
Can
in Ohio,
blame
it's like, well, when there's no money, they close the factories. It's the same sort of cycle that hit the industrialized parts of this country. Just
exactly.
You don't think of Hollywood that way, but it's really the same kind of thing.
Yeah, because you're still seeing movies, you're still watching television, but you're not thinking about how much it's changed this industry and the way that we're casting. You know, now, like, independent films need names in order to sell and get into festival. I mean, it's all about name. And if we can get a name for the seventh series regular lead, you know, they'll get one. And they usually can.
So, you come on to a lot of these shows as a guest or, like, a featured guest. Like, your part on Cold Case, which I'd seen. It's a big part. How is it coming in with, like, a crew you're unfamiliar with or a cast you're unfamiliar with? Like, how does that work? Is it usually easy, or do you find that it's like almost like first day of school trying to get to know everybody?
But you just moved in. No, but it's the middle of the semester and everyone's already friends.
Exactly. You're awkward standing there with your lunch tray just hoping someone will sit with you.
Seats taken.
Yeah, exactly. I've always found guest starring to be very, it's fun, of course, because you're stepping into a world and it's, you know, established, and especially if it's a show that you watch. I mean, I remember when I got an offer to do Scrubs, and I worshipped that show. Like, for me, I, like, walked on, and I was like, I'm going to geek out on every single one of you. I mean, I really love this show, you know? But it is hard because you don't know anyone, but you're always treated very well. But I always find that by the time you get to your fifth or sixth day and you start to make friends, you're leaving.
Yeah.
And unless you're doing a multi-episode arc, it can be really sad to say goodbye. And, you know, it's like just as you get comfortable, it's like summer camp. It's over. You know, you're going home and you're hoping people will write you.
But it's like popping in for a week of a six-week camp and you're there for week three.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, you were in Get Smart.
Yes.
And you have a big scene with Steve Carell in that. Awesome. Like, how was, and I mean, that was all over the trailers, I remember.
It was.
How was, I mean, working with
amazing.
Him, that must have been fantastic.
You know, I mean, honestly, it's one of those, like, glory moments, I think, for actors. It's kind of like how I imagine football players equate, like, you know, throwing the touchdown or the pass that wins the game and stuff. During that time, I remember, I feel like I wasn't at, like, that was like 2007, you know, so it was before the writer's strike. I had still been working, you know, like not worrying about making my insurance, you know, like life was a little different. And I remember getting the audition, and of course I was a Steve Carell fan because, I mean, watched that guy and everything back. I mean, I guess Anchorman,
you started 40-year-old virgin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he just is obviously a comedic genius, but. The first thing we had to do was go read the scene because it's this, you know, so if anyone hasn't seen it, it's a ball there. It's they're in Russia, Steve Carell and Anne Hathaway's characters, and Anne Hathaway is dancing with the bad guy and Steve Carell wants her to leave, but she won't. So he goes and grabs this big girl and is like, let's dance. And it turns into a competition between Anne Hathaway and her character, the bad guy character, and then Steve and I. So I went and I read for it, and then the second phase of it was a dance audition. Now, I have dancing under special skills because I can, like, lay down, like, a booty dance, like a booty shake, right?
You know,
like,
I have conversational Italian on my resume. Yeah.
You know, it's funny, as I was just talking to an actor friend today, side note, and she has that she's fluent in French because she feels like, you know, she could go to France and speak it, and she went in for a casting session, a big casting director, and the casting director started to speak to her in French, and she, like, froze. And I guess the casting director was like, you should be really careful about what you put on your resume. And right. She's like, oh, you know, so.
She just taught her a lesson.
And she didn't get into the new Jean-Pierre Junot film. Like, okay, so you had to go for a dancing audition.
I was like, you go casting director. You put that poor little actor in her place. No, anyways, but and I remember I showed up for the dance audition, and there were like 10 of us that they brought back for this. And I had on like strappy sandals. I didn't have dancing shoes because at this point we didn't know it was ballroom, like Dancing with the Stars kind of thing. And I remember this was one girl and she had on like full on dance shoes. And I had a panic attack. Like I might have to leave. Like, and I've never felt that way in an audition, but I got through the, you know, teaching part. And then we had to go in and dance with the professional on camera. And it was harrowing, but, I managed to like really fake my way through it. And then, so then the third phase of this was, and then I went and I shot a film. No, wait, not yet. I knew I was going to shoot a film. I was going out to do an independent film in North Carolina that I was excited to play the lead in. You know, it was like not very much money, but I was going to go work. And I got called like the day before to go in to read with Peter Siegel. So you walk into...
The director of Get Smart.
The director of Get Smart, sorry. Now, Peter Siegel has directed like every single film he's done, from Tommy Boy to Anger Management, has made like $100 million. So you go into his offices and it's like every, you know, they have all the posters down the hallway. And I was like, and I figured it'd be me and a couple other girls, again, not like as crazy as I would be like right now. I can't believe how calm I was about it. And I remember I went in, I didn't have to dance, and I read for him, and he said, great, you know, we're thinking about filming this in Romania in like, you know, at the end of April. And I thought to myself, well, that'll be fun for whoever gets it.
Good for them. Passports.
Well, nothing is nicer than Romania in April.
That's what they say.
That's when the Dracula's castle is really
full bloom. And I really remember walking out not thinking that it happened. And then fast forward, obviously I got it. We did not end up shooting in Romania. We shot in Montreal, but
shot in Burbank.
We shot. Yeah, this doesn't look like Romania. It's Warner Brothers. So I remember they took us all out to dinner after the first night of filming. And I mean, honestly, Steve Carell and Annie Hathaway could not be nicer.
That's like, always great to hear.
I know. I feel like I wish I had a scandalous story from it in a way. I do, because it's like they were so nice and so kind and like so perfect. I mean, I've worked with TV stars who are bigger monsters than like these guys.
That's why they're on TV.
That's well, that's probably why. And, so
yeah, too bad you don't have a like. Then Anne Hathaway slapped the gaffer or the...
Screamed at the waiter in French and Spanish.
Don't look at me. You know, stop looking at me. No, what's your job? So, sorry, I had to do a flashback to the Bale outburst. But so we went to dinner really in the last of the Get Smart story. And Peter was sitting there and he... First of all, I didn't know that they found out it was my birthday the day before.
Oh.
So we go out to this amazing dinner, and they, like, get a cake, and they sing. And I was completely blown away by this, because I'm still just, like, you know, a smaller role in this $80 million feature. And he says to me, so we watched your tape, the dancing audition, and he goes, and we thought to ourselves, well, she can dance, but can she act? Dead serious, like, thought I was, like, some dancer and not, like, an actor.
Like, that was your first skill.
Like, that was
but
my...
She must have studied dance for years.
For years in Russia.
We'll never know.
In Russia, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I had to laugh because I thought I had done, you know, I had been passable. I mean, like, this girl who had gone before me, like, came out and, like, did the splits and was like, nailed it! And I was like, you know, my sandals were falling apart. So, anyways, it was amazing, and people really enjoyed it because they felt the scene was like a positive sort of, you know, here she's a big girl and you're so used to movies, you know, making fun of obviously the jokey, the bit part, you know, the, like, let's have her bend over, or she jumps in a pool and all the water empties out. And here it was this sort of like, he, you know, used to be heavy, and so he picks her to dance with him, and then they kick ass.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's a great scene in the film. And you mentioned, like you said, it's a good scene for a big girl, a bigger actress. Do you think that has helped you with certain, like, it's a town of extremes, sometimes people say. So, I mean, do you think that you've gotten a lot of parts because of that, because they're looking for someone with that look, or how
Absolutely.
Do you think that works?
You know, it's really a double-edged sword. I knew when I was coming, when I was moving here, that I would be a character actress, which is obviously anything other than the, you know, gorgeous 110-pound Angelina Jolie type, you know. You know, character is a wide category, you know, like, you don't have to be overweight to be a character actress. And I never really felt, though, that I, like, the roles would be so fat specific in a way, you know. And so, of course, I started booking them, but I really... Yeah, I mean, I would not have a career if I was not overweight, and that got me in for roles that were specific for that. And then it's held me back on getting things because they've said she's too big, you know? So, you know, it's absolutely a double-edged sword, and it's something, you know, you struggle with. It's like, what, you know, you're too big, or you're too small, you're too, you know, you're always too something sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
Do you think the success of Bridesmaids last year with
McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy has changed anything, or was that very specific to her as an actress and her background in improv and all of that?
That's like, that's such an excellent question, because that is what, I mean, I'm very good friends with a lot of the women in my category. We've been auditioning together for 10 years.
Each other,
you see the same people. And then you decide to be friends and not enemies and go out and drink wine and complain and, you know, or talk or whatever. I don't know. I haven't seen anything yet.
It's too early.
Maybe it's too early. I have a feeling sometimes with roles like that, the industry tends to go, oh, well, it was successful because it wasn't successful because Melissa McCarthy played a fat woman. It's successful because it was an ensemble. Like, the industry needs to see a project that is like a hit, like multiple projects that are hits with people of size in order for it to change anything. Like, even Mike and Molly, the TV show she's on, does well. But I'm telling you, and then Bridesmaids does well, but then this last pilot season, there was not one pilot with a character, I didn't go out for one pilot, for one overweight character.
Doesn't, also from Bridesmaids, doesn't, what's her name, Rebel Wilson, the Australian?
Yeah.
She's got a pilot, I don't know if it got picked up, I don't know if it's good, I don't know anything about it, but I know that she, I don't know.
Yeah, I have a bone to pick with her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I it's funny because... Yeah, I want to start...
So we are going to get a juicy story.
Yeah, no. I want to start, like, a war with Rebel Wilson. Well, first of all, your name's Rebel, so we're going to brawl, right?
Yeah.
I've never met her. I have nothing against her personally, but this is an example of... You know, she came, you know, she has an improv background. Her show did not get picked up, by the
way.
Oh, it
didn't.
And it was
okay.
supposed to be retooled, but now I've heard, I hear it might be dead again. Because I was following that project, of course.
Spite following.
Yeah, I was following it, and loathing it. No, you know, nothing against her, good for her, but this is another example of, like, she, you know, she auditioned for the movie. No one else I know of went in for it, but a lot of times with these comedies, it's like the improv people,
they
like
kind
it's
of,
an incestuous
yeah. say the same word,
group,
yeah.
And I talked to my agent about her because I was like, I've been doing this for 12 years. Yeah. Where does she come from?
She
and,
came from Australia.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know,
the Hemsworth brothers.
Can we do a whole podcast about Hollywood's obsession with Australian actors and how like every TV show has an Australian lead, whether you know it or not?
I have obsessions with
Australia. My new roommate's gonna be Australian. Came in, he's like,
is he an actor?
Nah, he's an IT guy.
Oh, okay. That's over. It's all right then. But like, really, they're obsessed with like Australia. Like, there's this. I mean, I think they're pretty and they sound hot. But, anyways, you know, she. So you know, no one I know went in for Bridesmaids, and apparently I figured that Melissa McCarthy, the role was written for her, but apparently yeah. they were reading these improv women for it. And apparently, I read this article that Rebel Wilson read for that role, and they knew she wasn't right for it, but they loved her so much, they wrote her a part, you know? And here she is now, like, has six films in the pipeline and got her own show. And I'm like, how does this happen? Like, you know, you're told you can you come to Hollywood and you start auditioning and you get jobs and you get a demo reel. And I mean, now I sound like a really annoying actor.
Well, you know what? Rebel Wilson.
Yeah.
The Will Sean podcast got a bone to pick with you, too.
Yes.
And we want you to come on and answer. We want you to come on and answer for your fucking crime.
Is this the time to ask a stupid question?
Yes.
Which one is Rebel Wilson?
She was.
There's only two fat girls in that movie.
She was the one who lived with Kristen Wiig, and she had the weird, like, brother. She was the brother and sister.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Right. Now it all snaps into place.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move along here, though, because we have to, before we move on to the tops, we have to talk about Blubberella.
Oh, my.
Because, I mean, you are the face of this movie. You are Blubberella in Blubberella, and I love that you're getting so, you're like shrinking in your seat.
Am I?
A little bit. I watched this movie the other night.
I hope you were drunk.
I was not. I think it might have been a mistake that I was not, because
yes.
I feel like if I was in a room with, like, drunk friends watching it,
yeah.
we'd be like, this is the greatest thing
Give
ever.
A quick synopsis of Blubberella.
Wait, the
Seeing
official
as I only
one?
Saw the trailer.
I saw it after a full day out with people, and then I came home at 11 o'clock at night and decided this is the perfect time to watch Blubberella. yes, yeah, Sean, you just watched the trailer.
Yeah.
Blubberella, and correct me if I'm wrong, she's half human, half vampire. And she's in the 1940s Germany,
mm-hmm.
killing Nazis,
like you do,
and she's you, and that's I mean that's what it is. She's running around killing Nazis. I mean, I know there's a plot, but really,
do you?
I saw Clint Howard.
Is that what you assume?
Yeah, Clint Howard's in it. You can't go wrong with Clint Howard.
Well, you know,
he was the ice cream man. He was the little kid on that episode of Star Trek. He's a creepy little kid on Star Trek. The original Star Trek.
And strangely serious, though.
Is he?
Yeah.
I hear he's really conservative. I hear, like, Ron Howard's, like, liberal, and Clint Howard's, like,
well, it's like the Baldwin brother that's a born-again Christian.
Yeah.
Oh, really? One of them is?
Yeah, he's like a super hard
guy. How do they not punch Baldwin. Each other, really?
They Stephen give each other a lot of crap. It's kind of like a fun...
Wow.
But...
Yeah, strangely... No, he was very nice. I met his wife, and we flew over on the same, you know, flight from Los Angeles. Nice guy,
but
you
on a military aircraft.
Yeah, right?
Well, let me...
Strapped in like Hannibal Lecter.
This, and if I'm pronouncing his name, this is directed by Uwe Boll. Is
it's
that
actually Uwe.
Uwe.
If that... Yes, and people try to correct me, but... Trust me when I tell people it's Uwe. There's no W's in German.
Yeah,
so,
it's a
oh,
yeah.
that's right. Stupid me. But
well, let me tell you, the girl who played. Well, first of all, We'll talk about Uwe's name because he's.
Well, Uwe is notorious for. He's been called the worst working director in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
or just the worst working director. I don't think he's ever made a movie in
he
Hollywood.
He wanted to box a critic.
He did actually. He boxed one.
Did
critic.
He win?
Oh, yeah. He used to be like an amateur boxer. Like, what? I would this not critic, scrap
critics,
with him.
Critics are idiots. Critics are like us. We can't fight people.
Well, that's what happened. That's how, like, the story got in Entertainment Weekly. I don't know. Yeah.
I remember the article.
Yeah. Clark Collis, who's a senior writer in New York, got wind of this and knows about Uva because he wanted to box Uva, but he couldn't. He had to be under like 250 pounds, he said, and he couldn't get under the weight in order to box him. So,
well, something else weird with this film because it's you're like on cell phones and computers. My favorite thing that did make me laugh about this film, and the film is fucking crazy. I actually recommend you get really drunk and watch it because it's insane. And you're like, you like Jewish guys in the movie, or you make a mention of
that. Let's start at the beginning.
Which is great, because I love Jewish women. I'm always down with the Semitic good looks. I'm down with Semitic good looks. And I think at one point you refer...
I'm just forced to like Jewish women.
Yeah, you're forced to. I just like it.
You're forced to?
I have a Jewish mother.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So
that explains everything.
But you, like, Hitler's, like, in your eyes, he's like a major cock blocker.
Yes.
Which that... idea was very funny. I mean,
well, listen. Let me.
And offensive, which
let's
is
talk
great.
About it. Totally offensive. First of all, the reason why this movie even exists is that Uva took over. There's a video game called Blood Rain, right?
Yes.
And it's about a damn fear, which is half vampire, half human, and she wears very slinky outfits.
Is that Christina Loken?
The very first one they did was Christiana, yeah, Lokian or Loken or whatever her name is from Terminator.
Yes.
The likes of Billy Zane and Sir...
Ben Kingsley.
Ben Kingsley.
That's right.
Right?
What was Ben Kingsley thinking?
Apparently, he was his like grandkid was like a big fan of vampires, and he wanted to do a vampire movie. So Uwe directs this, and it's a hot mess. I mean, it's just a steamy... pile of dirtiness and grossness, and it's awful, and it doesn't do well, and it has a wide theatrical release, of course. So then a few years later he does a second one with a different actress playing Rain, Natasha Malti, and then he goes to I do a movie with Uva. Okay, I get a call that this Canadian, you know, director, or this movie that's shooting in Canada with this German director, wants me to play this role. They had seen an episode I did of My Name Is Earl, which is totally random, you know, that they're watching.
Because you watch My Name Is Earl, and then you're like.
Right?
Blubberella.
So I go do this other movie, a small part in Postal, which is another Uwe Boll film.
Oh, yes. I haven't seen this one either. I'm very familiar with some aspects of it.
Well,
9/11 stuff.
Well, let me tell you. I did a small part, did not have a whole script. I flew to Vancouver. They paid me a shit ton of money. I flew back and then went to the screening.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there and I'm watching the opening, which is a 9/11.
It's there in the cockpit of a plane.
Yeah, and I'm thinking it could be 2050 and it's too soon. Way too soon for this. And I'm sort of cringing, and there's like Josh Duhamel is there for some random reason, like sitting to my left, and then there's
Sir Ben Kingsley.
Like, it's just this random thing. But anyways, after the movie, shooting my one day, I literally said two words to Uva, like, hey, thanks for having me. And he's like, you're welcome. Like, there was no direction, nothing. I didn't even think he knew I existed beyond, like, that thing. So I go to say goodbye to him after he does this, like, talk back where he talks about, because everybody wants to know where he gets his money, and he likes to joke that it's Nazi gold. And, I mean, he is absolutely the first. It's insane.
We gotta get him on the show.
Somebody did a podcast with him from Germany. Like, and he's crazy. Like, you have to, if you can, that would be excellent. So, like, he's always up for, if you can get him, up for talking. So, anyways, he said to me, this is my favorite story, and I like to tell it anytime anybody wants to hear me talk. But I'm leaving, and I was like, bye, and he's like, wait, I have this idea that we do Blood Rain, but you play Blood Rain, and everyone might go, ha, 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 but you kick ass. And I look at him for like a second, and I'm like, okay, call me. I mean, what else do you say, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, but actually, the idea of taking this iconic video game heroine that has been turned into two shitty movies and putting a fat girl playing that role is actually kind of funny and forward thinking in a way.
It, in a weird, strange, brilliant, meta, crazy
it
way.
Makes sense.
It makes sense. But
and why would you want to? Because how many actually opportunities are any actresses, let alone like we're talking about larger, like plus size actresses, get a chance to shoot guns and be kind of a superhero?
Oh, absolutely. That's all you have to say, superhero, to me, or you know, or just the fact that you'd be like number one on the call sheet. You know, I mean, to be the star of a movie, you don't get that as a plus size actress, you know, no name actress. So, but of course, you know, with it being Uva, it came, so 2 years go by, and now we're heavy into the writer's strike recession, yeah. Right? Now it's 2008, late 2008, and it's a, 2009, and it's a completely different world, right? Now everyone's scared, and everyone's, you know, I hadn't worked very much, like, everything was drying up, and I get the call in, like, August, and like I said, it's the dead of the season, nothing's going on, and he's like, I want to do it, and I want to shoot in Croatia in early 2010. And I'm like, hello? And then all of a sudden, after I agreed to do it, because it was an untitled superhero spoof was what the name of it was. But then I learned very late in the game, very, very late, that he was going to shoot it back-to-back with Blood Rain 3.
Okay, I remember reading this from the Entertainment Weekly. Yes.
So two movies, right? 30 days. Now,
it explains a lot about Blubberella, by the way. If you've seen Blubberella, it explains a lot about it.
Well, that's why when people say, what is this movie? You know, because it doesn't make much sense. Because we tried to take scene by scene. It's supposed to be a parody of Blood Rain 3 and then thrown in other, like, spoofy, like, you know, they do these, like, I Know What You Did Last Summer in the Hood kind of, you know, things where absurd things happen, like having a cell phone in 1940s.
There's even a scene where they even come out and say, this scene is boring or something. Like, there's, like, weird meta things.
Absolutely.
I wonder, watching this with Blood Rain 3, if somehow it, I don't know.
And you have to turn on Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon as well.
And you have to be doing peyote. I mean, like, that's the only way it makes sense. And Lindsay Hollister does not advocate drug use, unless you're watching Blubberella.
Unless you're watching Blubberella.
So that's what. So I mean, try to do one special effects-driven feature in 30 days, let alone two. So I get to Croatia. I'm being held. You know, they take like
hostage.
It's like Stockholm syndrome, and they start cutting scenes out of. First of all, we have no script. Did I tell you this? No script. There's no one wrote a script.
This also explains a lot.
Yeah,
about it.
No
and
script.
You also have a credit, though. You have a writing credit.
I do have a writing credit. Because you would say, why wouldn't somebody want their name on such a shiny turd?
I guess that's very generous of him.
Because he had said to me, he had sent me Blood Rain 3 and said, tell me what you would want to do to spoof, like, to change it up to make it funny. So I sent back him all of my notes.
Yeah.
And I thought the writer of Blood Rain 3 was going to write the parody. We get to Croatia, sit down for a table read, and it is my notes in a binder.
What a nightmare.
A nightmare. Like cold sweat, like, I'm in Croatia. I'm in Eastern, like, as far, in February.
You're in as deep as you could possibly. Well, let me ask you this. All said and done, would you work with him again?
That is such a good question. You know, it's funny because when I told him...
Yeah, because I heard he's doing one of the Hunger Games movies.
Yeah.
The third one, Mockingjay, is going to be
the movie. Actually, they're hiring for Avengers 2.
You know, first of all, he paid me very well. I bought a house. I do not regret the project in the aspect of sometimes you just have to work and you can, you have to, like, swallow your pride.
It's like George Clooney did Batman and Robin.
Yeah, exactly. If
he
somehow,
bought a villa, you bought a house.
He'll be okay. I bought a house in North Hollywood. Same thing, right?
But, I mean, it kind of is. It's kind of relative to the scale of it.
Yeah, I mean, I got insurance and I, you know, went towards my pension and, you know, it's all those things where you kind of have to be like, yeah, I did a shitty movie for the money, but I honestly didn't set out for it to be as bad as it was. And it just was a series of unfortunate events.
And he's also doing a sequel to that, too.
It's a cult film. It's a cult film, and I mean, I see on Twitter, I see things like people watch it, people
they
talk
do.
About it. It's been
they
on,
quote
like, TV.
It.
Yeah.
Well, so this is the thing: is I said to him at the end of the shoot, because we had like 80 minutes. There's not a movie here, and I said to him, I go, you need to package this same DVD, Blood Rain 3. Just have like her on the front, the skinny girl, and then on the back, it's like me, you know. And he refused and sold it as two separate movies, and I cannot believe it shows on Showtime. Yeah. It's on Netflix streaming, and my favorite thing to do is go on Twitter and see what people are saying about it. And there are people who kind of get it, who get that it's supposed to be like this bar. You go back and watch Barbarella. I mean, that's like...
Well, you want... Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge John Waters fan, and I was thinking about how some of his early films were made. And, I mean, there are some jokes that you guys are using that I could imagine he would have been using. And granted, this is in the early 70s, but still, there's something almost charming about a movie than when you know it's made on that level. And,
right.
You know, well, look, everybody go
still
out.
There's some excuse for it, I guess.
Go on Netflix.
Go on Netflix. Get drunk with your friends. Watch Blubberella.
Let Lindsay get some residual checks.
Now.
Don't download it for free.
Stream it on Netflix.
Stream it on Netflix, Showtime Beyond or something like that. There's like a Showtime, like, you know, don't let your mom know you're watching Showtime Network. Right.
So do we want to try and burn through some topics in 10 minutes?
I'm going to say, we're going to go a little long on this. But the stories have been so interesting.
Yes.
we're going to go a little long on this, people.
Bear with us.
Bear with
Strap
us.
In.
But you know what? What else are you fucking doing? Lindsay, we're going to talk some topics now.
Oh, I know. Zach Wait, Fox is almost at work, and he's looking at the clock right now, so.
And, at what point did Andrea Marchant tune out?
I don't know what point Andrea Marchant
tuned out. Andrea, you better be in this. We are Facebook friends.
It's true.
Okay, so, Katie Holmes...
had her own case of Stockholm Syndrome.
Yes, she filed for divorce from Tom Cruise and from Scientology as a whole.
She still signed up for the billionaire contract, or did she get out of that as well?
You know, she's going to have to live with him on a planet with Xenu in the afterlife.
Well, listen, the core of this is she filed for divorce... They went through a quick settlement, and from what I heard is that the settlement really just hinged upon custody of Suri and how that is going to get treated. And the fact they went through such a quick settlement screams, there's a lot of shit we don't want getting out into public, so we're going to settle this right now. Because
yeah.
All the financial stuff had already been handled in the prenup, so that wasn't an issue.
Well, I mean, we all knew this would happen eventually, right? I mean...
We weren't sure whether it was a 5-year contract
or a 10-year contract.
Yeah, because he had the 10-year
contract.
Or
9.5. You got to go 9.5 before it becomes...
Because that's what he had with Nicole Kidman.
Yes.
Well, I don't know what he had with Mimi Rogers.
Well, it's interesting
one.
That I've read this in a couple of places, that all three of Tom Cruise's marriages ended when the girl was 33 years old.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, Mimi Rogers, Nicole Kidman, and Katie Holmes.
Nicole Kidman was 33 years old?
Yeah.
Oh. Wow.
It's hard to remember because she's had so much fucking plastic surgery. I have no idea how old she is.
But that's kind of true. I always hear that he... I mean, you always hear the stories like he auditions like new wives. Or I heard a story, and I don't know if it's true, about Scarlett Johansson, about how when they would... And it's why she wasn't in Mission Impossible 3 when she was supposed to be. She came to Scientology Center and was having dinner with Tom Cruise. And they...
He whipped it out.
Well, as the evening went on and on, they started getting deeper and deeper into a conversation about Scientology. And she started to get more and more freaked out. And other people would join them. And they're talking about e-meters and all this weird Scientology stuff. And then she excused herself to use the bathroom and apparently left. Left without saying goodbye because she was freaked out. That's what I heard. Don't know if it's true. But
and,
as far as I'm...
And then when it had a quickie marriage to Ryan Reynolds.
Yes.
Shame.
Would you, let me ask you this, for your career, would you become a Scientologist?
Abso-fucking-lutely. Call me, Tom. I absolutely would. But it's different. I feel like Katie Holmes didn't, like she had done Batman. She was in the first
she
Batman.
She was Joey Potter in Dawson's Creek.
Well,
you
yeah,
don't
but
much...
I don't know why she felt like she needed to do this.
Maybe certain promises were made.
I think it was.
Maybe. I mean, there was an interview in 17 Magazine years ago where she was like, I would love to marry Tom Cruise.
Yeah, but
like,
she has
I mean,
to meet him and see the crazy in his eyes and just know. Like,
maybe he's
know.
Good at hiding it.
I've heard that he's kind of weird. Like, people who meet him say he's very nice. But there's a little, like...
We can all put, like, when you... I heard someone talk about this, like, when you go out on a date or something, when you go... Like, I went out on a date this week. I hid my craziness, my neuroses and
Has
craziness.
She
no, she hasn't.
Well, I don't know how well we hid it then.
Exactly. But the point...
We think we're hiding it.
But you know what I mean? I guess you still do see the craziness behind Tom Cruise's
life. I don't know. We're not going to get to the bottom of this. It's shrouded in the most powerful cult since Mormonism.
But she obviously signed something. She knew what she was into.
I mean, this seemed like a planned out thing.
How cynical are we being about this, though?
I'm pretty cynical.
I'm pretty cynical about this, too.
I have faith in the human condition.
You have faith in the religion of Scientology.
I have faith in love. In the human heart.
Let me ask one more Scientology question, because it kind of fascinates me, because, I mean, I'm not religious at all. I think it's all kind of bleh. But, I mean, like a couple hundred years from now, are we going to look at this like Mormonism, like as legitimate...
Wait, are we going to look at it, though, how the Republicans are ignoring Mitt Romney's Mormonism? Like, or are we going to...
either way, even at that level, will Scientology ever reach that level?
Oh, I think Scientology is more feared than Mormonism.
It's more of a cult of personality.
It's a fucking sci-fi writer.
You know why? Yeah. Because you don't know much about it until you get into it, and then your people are too afraid to get into it. Like, Mormons are more of an open book.
Nah. When I was a kid, there was the commercials for Dianetics and the volcano, and I'm like, oh, a book about volcanoes. Then you get older, you look at it, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Okay, we're moving on.
Before we get killed, we should move on.
Yes, yes, because
we're
already
sorry.
Those secret Scientology police are...
The aliens have already detected this conversation.
I have... My body is full of... I was going to say, my body is full of Thedons. The Emmy nominations are coming out very soon.
Next week, yeah.
This coming week.
We're going to have a very special Emmy episode when those nominations are out.
Yeah, it'll be a great episode of me and Sean talking about television, because God knows you want to hear that. And every year around this time, I look at a lot of shows and a lot of actors that never get nominated. I hope they finally get their nomination. Because the Emmys, it gets a little stale. It's like the Sal Giuliano Margulies is going to win for like the third
time. How many times does Fucker win for Monk? Who was that?
Ben Gazzara?
What the hell was his name?
Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah, close enough.
But I was thinking about some people that I would like to see get nominated who inevitably won't. And for me, the number one, I'm a huge fan of Fringe. I don't know if you watch Fringe, Lindsay.
I don't.
But John Noble has been doing some of the best work on network television for years on the show. It is a funny part. It is the heartfelt part. He plays insane, but there's a lot of humanity to it. And he has been overlooked. I would love to see him get an Emmy nomination. He won't because they're fucking idiots. I would love to see him get a... I would also love to see Nick Offerman for Parks and Recreation get an Emmy, because Ron Swanson is one of the most, like...
He's one of the great comedic characters on television.
Yeah, one of the most unique characters. I mean, and he sells that. So I was thinking about this. Sean, are there any things you would like to see come Emmy nomination?
Yeah, I think that it's kind of pulpy. It's one of my favorite shows, Spartacus. And this past season, Spartacus Vengeance. Lucy Lawless did phenomenal work. Liam McIntyre, who had to fill the roles of Andy Whitfield, who had played Spartacus in the earlier seasons and died, was phenomenal. Viva Bianca, who plays one of the characters in the show, she's the blonde one who's married to the... can't remember the name right now, but the very statuesque blonde.
Yes.
They are doing some phenomenal work on that show, and it's a hard show, and there's a lot of really extreme behavior, nudity and violence, and they're just acting crazy, and they're selling it, and they're doing it in a way that anchors the performances in some sort of humanity, even though the show could easily spin into cartoon land, but it doesn't. And that's a testament to the writing and the acting. And it's going to get overlooked, but it really is. It's a great show.
Yeah, that's a show that people won't think of, but it is a fantastic show. You see, the Emmys are just going to nominate the same goddamn things. Lindsay, are there any like standout people or shows that you would like to see get some attention?
I mean, I always think there's the... Well, first of all, I would really like for guest star Emmy nominations to actually go to...
Because they always...
They go
like
to
Shirley MacLaine and Alan Alda.
And they'll do, like, one, like, small bit, and they're getting nominated because their names...
It feels like it's a just give it to the name.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there are some incredible guest star actors doing better work than anybody else, even series regulars, and they'll never be nominated. Like, again, it's like the name thing, you know? And I know it's a hard... You can't be down on it too much, because, of course, you want to be a name, and then when you have the name, have all these privileges. But, you know, there's a lot of unsung heroes. I don't really know, like, as far as... Like, again, I think it is pretty much the same thing. You know, it's like, I think Monk will continue to get nominated.
I think it's even awesome.
That's done.
Thank God. But
they'll still nominate. They're still nominated because they're fucking crazy.
Frasier's going to get nominated again.
Yeah. Kelsey Grammer. Who's my prediction for best comedy actor? Kelsey Grammer. My prediction for best comedy actor? Candace Bergen for Murphy Brown. These are my predictions. I'm going out
on a limb. He got nominated for Boss, right? Kelsey Grammer.
I think he might have got a Golden Globe.
Oh, it was the Golden. See, I confuse Golden Globes and Emmys.
Everyone does.
There's some great people. Like, I mean, I really got into The Killing. I don't know if you guys are like a Killing.
I watched the first season and I'm like, fuck you, The Killing.
But
no
see,
more.
But that I know.
But she's really good in it.
She's and he's good. Joel Kinnaman. And then what's the guy who plays like the dad?
Kelsey Grammer.
I think he's actually did some really fine work. But what was the thing, though? Did they promise people they would say who the killer was?
Killing road checks they weren't ready to cash.
I don't think they ever said they were going to
tell
you. Well,
you know,
Why was everyone mad?
The Danish version, they didn't solve the mystery after the first. He's like, those are the Danes. They got nothing better to do.
So you're
just America. We want answers.
You're just an impatient American. You're giving us all a bad name.
But the way that the season was structured, they really felt like they were building towards something, and then they pulled the rug out from under you at the end of the season finale. It's like, what the fuck was that? That didn't solve anything, because they really, if they had told us this is going to be a multi-season process, fine. Well, another issue with that show, real fast, is that they would throw up red herrings left and right to just burn story. You know, it's like every episode they'd throw up a suspect, and then it was no kind of good.
Well, let me tell you what.
I thought it was engrossing the first season. Did you just hate it when you got to the end of it?
No. I gave up about three quarters of the way through. I felt like I was getting strung along. So.
Oh, okay.
Well, let me tell you what. One show that deserves every Emmy nomination it gets, and it will get some, although it probably won't win series, but Bryan Cranston has won, I think, the last three
years.
And
Aaron Paul won last year. Yeah.
And Aaron Paul, and the show is Breaking Bad. And it is, I think, bar none, the best show on television right now. I love the show. Each season gets better and better. Sean, you just caught up to it.
I spent the last 3 weeks watching the show like a fiend, and it's phenomenal. I hope Giancarlo Esposito gets nominated for his work last season.
I think that's where I think the Emmys might get it right. I think they might nominate Giancarlo Esposito. He played on this past season, season four, he played
Gus
Fring, and he was the villain. He was the big bad of the last season on the show.
I have to admit, we watched, my man and I watched like the first three episodes, and I was sad. And I don't get sad. I like drugs. I like people who kill people.
Yeah.
But I got sad, and now I have to go back and watch it because everyone's talking. I want to watch
shows. Sad because
of
you bought into the character so much, or you didn't like the show?
No, I mean, I felt like I didn't enjoy watching it, and I'm not saying that from like I watched some dark shit. I appreciate darkness. I appreciate character. I feel like I just didn't go far enough.
Really?
I mean, no, I'm saying, did I not watch enough episodes?
Oh, well, see, I was hooked in the first three episodes because then doesn't he kill that guy in the basement?
I felt like everything, it happened to, I was like, this is, okay.
A couple of things that happened there is it was some casting.
There was a basement thing, because I remember,
they also were planning to have certain characters last longer, but those actors end up getting cast
in
something else.
I think the writer's strike.
And the
writer's
strike also fuck up the first season.
But I still thought the first season, you're crazy, keep watching it.
No, I will, because it's on Netflix. I mean, we are sponsored by Netflix, if anyone didn't know how many times. No, but it's on Netflix streaming, so I'm going to go back.
Yeah, that's how I watched
watch it.
So.
Honestly, it's, I think, the best show on television. It's dark, but it also has some humor to it.
It's
like
funny.
It's a human show. Like I mentioned last week, I'm rewatching The Sopranos. It's, again, one of those shows that, in a lot of ways, is a dark comedy. You can look at it. But here's the problem. That now, well, let me ask you this, Lindsay. What is your cable provider? Do you have like a satellite thing? Do you have cable? Like, what do you have?
Time Warner.
I have Time Warner.
Time Warner.
And Time Warner's been doing me right compared to, say, if I had the Dish Network.
Right, because you don't get channels now.
Now, the Dish Network and AMC have been feuding over cost. AMC wants more money to charge. The Dish Network
has two subscribers.
Yeah, and those two guys won't be able to watch Breaking Bad if things. Maybe by the time this episode is up, they'll be able to watch Breaking Bad. But right now, they can't watch Breaking Bad. And then just yesterday, DirecTV and Viacom are fighting, and Viacom wants 30% more money. but DirecTV refused to negotiate, so now Viacom took off MTV, Comedy Central, Spike TV, Nickelodeon, Sean's favorite network, Logo. They've taken them all off, off the air. And who's suffering? Us. The customers, the TV viewing Americans. DirecTV, Viacom, you're killing Dora the Explorer. Dora the Explorer is fucking dead. Kids can't watch her. Nope. Kids are freaking out all across America.
Dora, stop, Dora.
People are freaking out because they can't watch the Breaking Bad. So you want to know what? The enemy is all you motherfuckers. AMC, you're the enemy of the podcast. Dish Network, you're the enemy of the podcast. Viacom, fucking DirecTV, fuck you all. You're the enemy of the podcast this week.
Rebel Wilson, blame
Rebel
you.
Rebel Wilson is in cahoots with DirecTV to prevent your children from watching SpongeBob SquarePants. Fuck her. Fuck you. I mean, it's a mess. And they pull this shit. They pull this shit all the time.
It's like mafia tactics. It'd be a shame if something happened to your channels. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's
protection
money. It might be too broad of an enemy in a way because there's so many people, but we're getting so fucked in the ass. I remember there was one year that they were threatening that we might not get something resolved by time for the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl might not air on Comcast networks or something like that. What the fuck? It's a Super Bowl. It's a national holiday. You're not going to air it? Like, that's on American. Fuck, I mean, this happened to me once, like, Time Warner was having a thing with Fox, and I wanted to watch Dollhouse, and I wasn't able to or something.
It's tragic. You just stayed home drinking, masturbating.
I know. I had to. Well, usually I do that after Dollhouse. Now I was masturbating too early in the evening.
Threw your whole sleep schedule off.
My whole sleep schedule off because I masturbate and go to bed. It was a big mess. Now, one thing AMC is doing, they are streaming Breaking Bad on their website. So you can watch it. But isn't that, I guess, I mean, maybe I'm the only one who watches things on TV. Maybe everyone else watches stuff.
I watch a lot of stuff on my computer. A lot of stuff on Netflix and on websites.
And that's why you're killing television.
Me?
Yeah.
You're the enemy of the podcast. You're killing TV. You're just as
killing
bad as
it.
Viacom.
All right. Let's not get crazy here. Dora the Explorer is safe from me.
Dora the Explorer dead. SpongeBob dead. Yo Gabba Gabba.
All those weird-ass motherfuckers.
All those monsters. Dead.
Children scarred.
It's no good. So I hope by the time this podcast comes up that this has been corrected. But even if it hasn't, the fact that you've put this scammer... If I had Dish Network, I love Breaking Bad so much, I would have got rid of them.
Yeah.
Or at least I would have called and screamed and yelled, and they might have cut me some deal and lowered the cost. And then I would have watched Breaking Bad online until they got this resolved. Because it'll get resolved eventually. But I shouldn't have to go through all this bullshit.
Yes, television is a right, not a privilege.
It is. No, I mean, honestly, we need television.
If not, we'd have to sit and think about how miserable our lives are.
I know. But, I mean, television entertainment, like Breaking Bad is as good as any movie, and we need entertainment in society because, you know, you need art.
And podcasts.
To be inspired. This podcast, we have this to inspire you. speaking of things that happened, of inspiring people or...
Where are you going with this?
Well, I just want to end on a sad note.
Oh.
This past weekend, a great actor died, who I was a big fan of, Ernest Borgnine, died at age 95. He won an Oscar for the movie Marty in 1955. It was a terrific film. He was in The Wild Bunch. He was in The Poseidon Adventure.
McHale's Navy.
McHale's Navy. That was his big television contribution. And I was a huge fan.
Also a voice in SpongeBob SquarePants.
Exactly. You killed him, Viacom, and DirecTV. But no, he was great. I thought he was terrific. Sean.
I loved him. He was a fantastic actor. Wild Bunch is one of my favorite movies. But you know what? 95. Come on.
But you know what I liked about him? He was one of those guys, 95, with it till the end, acting
He just
the
got
end.
The SAG Award, Lifetime Achievement Award, last year. He was 94 years old. He gave a lovely speech. He seemed fully on top of his shit. And
if only I could. But I'm going to be senile, right, at that point.
You'll be senile at 37.
I'm close to this
All
already.
All that mercury you eat. I don't know. Stop sucking on thermometers.
What I loved about him was he could play, like, the big... Like teddy bear or like the tough SOB.
Yeah.
And sometimes both in the same role. Like I grew up as a
kid.
So
he's Italian.
Well, yeah, he was Italian. But I mean, I loved him in the Poseidon Adventure, and I think that's the perfect role. I watched it as a kid over and over again. He played Rogo in that, and there's a scene where, you know, he's a tough guy, and he's always at odds with Gene Hackman, but then, spoiler alert, his wife dies in the movie, and he really breaks down. You see, like, a very upset Tenderson, and I think it's a great scene when he's yelling about his wife, his Linda died, and he was tremendous. Cabby in Escape from New York, people of our generation.
Future Cop.
Future Cop, great television show from the 70s. Pilot, one episode, Ernest Borgnine, John Amos, and a robot cop. Look for the clip on YouTube. Or it's actually posted on Facebook page.
Check it out. It's fucking hilarious.
J.T. Weir, a fan of ours, posted it. Mm-hmm. Did you have any thoughts on him? I'm putting you on a spot now to talk about a dead actor.
Sexiest name ever. Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah. Ernest goes to heaven. too soon?
Yeah.
One other clip.
Never too soon.
We were talking about my daily masturbation routine.
Oh, dear.
And
was it Ernest Borgnine crying about his Linda?
No. Ernest Borgnine. There's a great clip also on the Will Sean podcast
Facebook
page.
It's only the name
page.
Of the fucking show.
And it's a clip of Ernest Borgnine on Fox News. And they asked, and it's the greatest thing that's ever been on Fox News, they asked Ernest Borgnine, what's the secret to living a long, healthy life? And he says it was that he masturbated a lot. So
there you have it.
So there we go.
But that also means maybe Tova Borgnine wasn't fulfilling her wifely duties. Well, listen, this has been, honestly, I knew you'd be a great guest, but you had so many good stories to tell.
Oh, and so many more.
And Melody, you got your hour-long episode.
Yeah, our friend Melody Rock's always like, why don't you do an hour? I said, well, we don't have enough material, but you supplied us with the material today. Honestly, it was great having you on.
Thank you.
Yeah, seriously, thank you for coming out. I know it's late, and you've had a long week, so.
No, it was a lot of fun. You guys are hilarious.
Now,
they have a gun to my head.
Before we go,
help me.
We will give you the opportunity, before apparently we kill you, to plug a few things. Like, where can people find out more about you?
I like Twitter. So you find me there at, my name is Lindsay Hollister, and it's apparently just one letter too long for fucking Twitter. Fuck you, Twitter.
Well, it's 141 characters.
Make it longer. So it's LINDS, Linz Hollister, HOLLISTER.
Okay.
At Linz Hollister. I have a website, lindsayhollister.com.
We have a link to that on the Facebook page.
Yeah, you can pretty much, you can Google me and a lot of shit will show up, so.
And just Google Blubberella.
Google Blubberella.
Or stream it on Netflix. Watch it on demand.
It's a great story, you know, it's one of those films. And the people who've watched it and get it, thank you. I worry about your mental health, but thank you.
Sean, do the thing where you plug things. Do it quickly.
My book on Amazon Kindle, Triumvirs, TRIUMVIRS, three tales, buy it, read it. Download it. That's it. Oh, and my Twitter, TheSeanDavid, at TheSeanDavid on Twitter, and also Sean David Facebook page. Like it, follow it, laugh.
You can follow me on Twitter at TheRealWillLink, and you can also listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on The PM Show with Larry Minetti on CRNTalk.com. And in the upcoming weeks, we got a couple of good shows coming up. Next week we have, he's a dancer, he's a singer, he's a fucking awesome guy, DBL, Donnie B. Lord.
Lord of the Dance.
Is going to be on here. I wonder whether he finds that funny or not. We'll find out. We'll insult a man on the podcast. And the week after that, we have two guests, one episode, two girls, one episode.
You know what this means? We had to buy another microphone.
We have Kristen Carroll and Megan Salinas. I'm probably mispronouncing it. And they have a web series called Fangirl. It's a very fun series where they go hit red carpets and talk to the fans.
They're at Comic-Con this weekend.
We're going to bring them back in 2 weeks to give us a full report. It's going to be great. And, once again, great show today. Great show always. And I think
we're finished.
We're finished.